The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK. What's on your mind about firearms today? It's a great day in Fairbanks. Snow is on the way, and the temperature is a warm 26 degrees this morning. And here at the KFAR Broadcasting Station, Melissa Burnett is, yet again, expertly running the board for us. Thank you, Melissa, and welcome back. We missed you last week, and she's keeping the Shooter's Corner archives up to date for us. So if you miss the program, actually they're up to date now. It will be available in the archive.
So I'm updated about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, great. Thank you. So I don't know what I would do without Melissa. We wouldn't have this program, I can tell you that. So what is on our agenda today? I will finish our book review about W.D.M. Bell, known as Karamojo Bell, who wrote Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter in 1923. And we left off in chapter 15, titled Rifles, and we will understand Bell's thoughts on proper rifles and ammunition and technique for elephant. And we will dive into Dr. Kevin Robertson's book, The Perfect Shot 2, and compare what a modern-day licensed professional hunter and veterinarian has to say about hunting elephant. And that will take the entire hour, and then we will leave elephants alone for a while, and over the coming weeks get back to self-defense topics, some legal issues, and firearms, and some topics listeners have asked me about, and so we'll just move forward. Discovery. I made a discovery. If you would like to listen to Bell's entire book free, search in YouTube for The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter. It's the full audio. It was posted by Dangerous Crew Audio. It's 5 hours, 57 minutes long. I just found it this week. Gee, if I had known that was on there, we could have just played the whole thing. It's obviously in the public domain now without a copyright. We could have listened to the whole book. So you can listen to the whole book free, and that will include all the parts I skipped. And I just wanted to share that with you. So next week is Thanksgiving. I hope you will be listening in. I am preparing a Thanksgiving Day Shooter's Corner program for you. I did a lot of research on that program, and so I hope you enjoy it. The program will be pre-recorded because I'm going to be home making a turkey. And I will talk about Thanksgiving through the years, especially the Civil War, World War I, and World War II, and Thanksgiving's unifying spirit in the United States. So hope you can tune in next Thursday for that program. Brief announcements, because we have so much elephant hunting material to cover. Check into Reading's upcoming Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes are December 9th and 10th, coming up real quick, and then in 2024, January 27, 28, and February 24 and 25th. Take the Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class from an instructor with verified experience in both handguns and law enforcement, as well as a number of high-level certifications. And Chuck's going to be on the program sometime in the near future because he just got another high-level certification, and he'll share what he learned with you. We don't have a date for that yet, but it will be coming up. And Chuck has all of that plus a master's degree in education. So Chuck is offering his next defensive handgun for the Armed Citizen class on December 16 and 17. Sign up for both December 9th and 10th for the Concealed Handgun Permit class, and the week after, December 16 and 17, for this defensive handgun for the Armed Citizen class. And you can find my review of that defensive handgun class. It's in two parts. Part one was on April 20th, 2023, and part two on May 4th, 2023. All in the archives, thanks to Melissa. So sign up for Chuck's Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes or the upcoming Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen classes. That's a lot to say on his website. We're going to have good shorter names for Chuck's classes.
So, yeah, Chuck.
Alaska Ammo also has information about Chuck's classes because Chuck and Alaska Ammo partnered to be able to bring these to you. So if you want to be on Chuck's mailing list or have any questions about Chuck's classes, call Chuck at 844-966-4079 or go to his website, c4traininggroup.com. And one more from Chuck. I talked at length about this the past 2 weeks, so I won't do it again, just briefly. Tonight, Chuck partners with Alaska Ammo to conduct a free Stop the Bleed class at the new Alaska Ammo store, 6 to 8 p.m. I have taken this class from Chuck a couple years ago. There are 3 openings left. There's room for 15. 12 people have already signed up, so there's 3 openings left, and that's tonight. Accidents of many types can cause bleeding, severe bleeding, including firearms accidents. I know people who keep their Stop the Bleed type kits in their vehicles at all times, their first aid kits just in case. And Chuck will discuss the method to assess bleeding situations and how to address them. It's a step-by-step method. And then Chuck has the tourniquets. He has the rubber mannequin parts with wounds, to simulated wounds of a knife wound and a gunshot wound. And you'll learn how to pack these with the Stop the Bleed materials that he provides. And Chuck will help you through doing it correctly. And the class is free, as I said, and your kids can take the class with you. Sign up. Just email sales@alaskaammogroup.com. That's sales@alaskaammogroup.com. And put Stop the Bleed in the subject line, then list the names of who will be attending in the body of the email, or you can just stop into Alaska Ammo today and make sure to put yourself, your friends, and your family, whoever's going to attend, on that list. Remember, tonight, and no cost. And one last one, Glenn Miller's upcoming NRA Metallic Cartridge Reloading class, ready for registrants on the AIMCOM website. Those classes are January 6th and April 27th next year. There's only one spot open in the January class, so grab that one. Look in the Shooter's Corner archives on December 8th. That's when I talked about my experience when I took that class last fall from Glenn. So you can sign up at the AIMCOM website or call Glenn Miller, 907-347-1396. If you want to be in a future reloading class that isn't listed on the AIMCOM website, just call Glenn. So let's finish our discussion of WDM, or Walter Dalrymple Maitland Bell, also known as Karamojo Bell, his book, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter. And I started this book review on September 21st, and I talked about it each week since, except I didn't talk about it on November 2nd. All those transcripts are in the archives, again, courtesy of Melissa. Now, we are now in the last part of the book, chapter 15, titled Rifles. That's the last part, next to the last chapter, actually. And last week, we learned that the choice of rifle in Bell's mind has much to do with the hunter's style of hunting. And if you are rock steady and plan your shot correctly, a smaller caliber of specific type for that animal will do, because you will be more accurate, according to Bell. If you can't control your hunter emotion and you have to take that shot right away, you may not have the most accurate shot, and so a larger caliber rifle may serve you better. And I will repeat that quote from last week, and then two more, and then we'll move on to new material in the chapter on rifles. Quote, "The question of which rifles to use for big game hunting is for each individual to settle for himself. If the novice starts out with, say, 3 rifles, one heavy, say, a double 577, one medium, say, a 318 or a 350, and one light, say, a 256 or a 40 or a 276, then he cannot fail to develop a preference for one or the other of them," unquote. And about style of calmness for a perfect shot, Bell says, quote, "In this style, you keep perfectly cool and are never in a hurry. You never fire unless you can clearly see your way to place the bullet in a vital spot. That done, the caliber of the bullet makes no difference. But to some men of different temperament, this style is not suited. They cannot or will not control the desire to shoot almost on sight if close to the game. For these, the largest bores are none too big. If I belonged to this school, I would have built a much more powerful weapon than the 600 bore," end quote. And Bell most liked his 7mm Rigby Mauser, or the 276 with the old round nose, solid, about 200 grams, I think he mentioned. The 276 was an advantage for Bell because it took a shorter cartridge, and so short stroking was not an issue. And now we move on to new material. Bell had experienced short stroking with magnum length cartridges and likely watched others suffer through critical situations because of it. And so Bell liked the shorter cartridge. And Bell shares a short stroke ordeal with his 350 Mauser while in close quarters with a Rhino. And we will talk about Mr. Rhino right after the break.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings a herd to sleep.
In a baseball.
You can plan on it every day. You're either building something or you're repairing and adjusting stuff around the house. The list is long, from squeaking hinges to the annoying kitchen cabinet that refuses to stay shut. Well, there's always something, right? Sticky doors to the occasional wiring job and everything in between. You need tools, and Century Hardware has your back with the hand tools, power tools, and the largest selection of fasteners in the interior. Open every day. Century Hardware, what you need right now.
Hey, Interior Alaska. Having trouble hoisting yourself into your truck? Auto Trim Design has a huge selection of running boards, Nerf bars that'll take the acrobatics out of getting into your truck. Having trouble keeping stuff from flying out of your truck bed? Auto Trim Design has a huge selection of tonneaus, soft, hard, folding, roll-up, gear nets, and Lear or ARE toppers. See us today at Auto Trim Design, where we will be here when the other guys are gone.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR weather.
Overcast skies today with a chance for snow. High temperatures reach up to 26. East winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Snow likely again tonight, lows around 11. Snow likely tomorrow, 17. Overcast. 1 to 3 inches of snow today through tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett on the controls, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So we just talked about Bell sharing a short stroke ordeal with his 350 Mauser. So let me quote from the book. Quote, "I did not want any Rhino, but the villagers had complained about this particular one upsetting their women while gathering firewood, and we tracked him back into the high grass. I had foolishly allowed a number of the villagers to come with me. When it was obvious that we were close to our game, these villagers began their African whispering about as loud in the still bush as a full-throated bass voice in a gramophone song. Almost immediately, the vicious old beast could be heard tearing through the grass towards us. I meant to fire my first shot into the movement as soon as it became visible and to kill it with my second as he swerved. At a very few paces distance, the grass showed where he was, and I fired into it, reloading almost instantaneously. At the shot, he swerved across, almost within kicking range, showed a wonderful chance at his neck. I fired, but there was only one click. I opened the bolt, and there was my empty case," end quote. And that could have been a deadly, dangerous situation with an upset rhino. Rhinos are definitely one of the most dangerous game. Bell also once lost what he described as a magnificent bull elephant when he had a misfire with his 256 Mannlicher. And this is a good story. The elephant paid no attention to the misfire, so Bell quietly opened the bolt. And when the case came out, it spilled flake powder into the mechanism, but the bullet was securely lodged in the breech. Quote, "I tried to ram another cartridge in, but could not do so. Here was a fix. How to get that bullet out. Caliber 256 is very small when you come to try to poking sticks down it," end quote. So Bell finally got the bullet out, with the result of his barrel now being full of short pieces of sticks. And he could not get those little sticks out and could not find a proper stick to push them out. So he chanced it by loading another cartridge and shooting sticks and all into the elephant. Quote, certainly that elephant got nothing of the charge except perhaps a few bits of stick. That something had touched him up was evident from his anxiety to get far away, for he never stopped during the hours that I followed him. Unquote. And next, Bell discusses his dislike of and the drawbacks of the heavier devil. In his case, he used the 450-400 that I mentioned in the past. And Bell found this rifle to be slow on the third and any succeeding shots. Well, of course it is, because you have to reload. Cartridges weighed too much, the rifle was noisy, and when we get to Dr. Kevin Robertson, Robertson is going to say something about the same thing. So a quote from Bell, the strikers broke if a shade too hard or flattened, and cut the cap if a shade too soft, unquote. Bell says the caps of the cartridges were unreliable. Now, this is back in his day, over 100 years ago. The caps were unreliable. Sand and grit or vegetation could fall into the breech face as he walked through the bush. And if that happened, Bell says, you were done, because now you couldn't close it, couldn't close the gun. And grit fell from the vegetation covered with it as he walked through it. And that grit and mud got on the vegetation, on the bushes, because the elephant had taken a mud bath and walked through the brush, the same brush that Bell was walking through, was stalking it through. So the devils had their drawbacks, at least for Bell. And Bell moves on to general ammunition. Quote, I have never had any explanation of the undoubted fact that our British ammunition manufacturers cannot even yet produce a reliable rifle cartridge head, anvil, and cap other than that of the Service 308, unquote. Now, Bell tells of hunting elephants with another hunter. The friend had a misfire, and then Bell had an identical misfire. Both were using 318s with English-made cartridges. Quote, then on the same shot, I nearly had my head blown off and my thumb severely bruised by an English-loaded 256. There was no misfire there. The cartridge appeared to me almost to detonate. More vapor came from the breech end than from the other end, and I have since been told by a great authority that it was probably due to a burst case due to a weak head, unquote. Now, Bell complained to the manufacturing company, and they supplied him with a new batch of the cartridges, which he was told would be good ones. And Bell writes that whenever he fired four or five of them, he would get a jam. And upon investigating, he would, quote, find a cap blown out and lodging in the slots cut for the legs of the bolt head. Luckily, these cartridges are wanting in force. At one time, they used fairly to blast me with gas from the wrong end. The fact that these faults are not conspicuously apparent in this country, now he's in Britain, may be traced to the small number of rounds fired from sporting rifles, or more probably to the pressures increased in a tropical temperature, unquote. Now, Bell talks about shock. He has never been able to appreciate shock in terms of killing large game. He writes, one cannot hope to kill a 6-ton elephant by shock with a normal hunting rifle. Quote, and yet nearly all riders advocate the use of large bores as they shock the animal so much more than small bores. They undoubtedly shock the firer, the person using the gun, more, but I fail to see the difference they are going to make to the recipient of the bullet. If you expect to produce upon him by the use of big bores the effect a handful of shot had upon the jumping frog of Calaveras County, and that's from Mark Twain's story, you will be disappointed. Wounded non-vitally, he will go just as far and be just as savage with 500 grains of lead as with 200. And 100 grains in the right place are as good as 10 million, unquote. In Mark Twain's short story, a dishonest man pours lead shot into a famous jumping frog so that the frog will be too heavy to jump and he'll lose the frog jumping contest. Okay. So in the last paragraph on Bell's chapter on rifles, he tells us the thing that did the most for his rifle shooting skill was he has always carried his own rifle. And that rifle weighed 7 pounds. And Bell was constantly aligning it with anything at all. He said he was always playing with it. quote, constant handling, constant aiming, constant Swedish drill with it. And then when it was required, there it was, ready and pointing true, unquote. And you can Google Swedish drills on YouTube. Take the one titled Swedish Drill by West Lancashire Regiment, 1914 to 1918. It's a silent film. It's the real thing from 1914 to 1918. I suspect very close or exactly to what Karamojo Bell did for exercise. And now we are at the end. Bell reminds us what we already know brings success. Practice, practice, practice. So hold on to that thought on practicing, because the modern day professional hunter that I will talk about in next, when he closes his discussion, he has those exact same thoughts about practicing. And this is well over 100 years later. So we have finished our discussion on Karamojo Bell's book, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter. And remember, you can listen on YouTube free. Not to me, but to the person who's reading the book. Okay. And we learned what made him successful, what made Bell successful. We learned his thoughts on rifles and calibers and shot placement on elephants. And again, Mr. Bell wrote that book in 1923, and he had been hunting in Africa 20 or more, about 25 years before that. In my library at home, I have many books by and about Africa white hunters in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, all with riveting stories about their experiences. And we have a caller? No, we don't. Wait.
Somebody was looking at me through the window. I was talking to somebody through the window.
This is what...
You see me shaking my head?
Melissa's trying to talk to someone behind me that I can't see. Okay, all right, well, let me...
Just ignore me now.
Okay, I will ignore you.
Sign language going on.
Okay. Usually we communicate by hand signals.
Which is
talking, this talking thing was something new. Okay, so now some of these stories that I read in these books about the early white hunters, they actually kept me up at night thinking about them. They were that scary. But those are...
Now we have a caller.
Now we have a caller. Okay. Caller, you are on the line.
Hey, Laura, this is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
There was an interesting phraseology that you had kind of towards the beginning there. I think it was hunter anxiety or something similar.
Shooter anxiety?
Yes.
Yeah. The inability, the anxious, it's not anxiousness. There's some people that just can't stop and do something carefully. They're there and they're all excited and they got to shoot right now.
Yeah, well, back where I came from, we had a term for that. We simply called it buck fever.
But say that again?
Buck fever.
Buck fever. Yeah.
Might have been a colloquialism, I'm not sure.
That's funny. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, Landon Hawk, who we're going to be teaching. He was my co-instructor for the youth program we used to give for years, and now we're going to be starting that up again in January at Alaska Ammo. But he and I were talking about this, and I got to thinking about this calmness and deliberate trigger, working the trigger very deliberately. And really, that applies to anyone that's handling a gun, and it especially applies to target shooters and precision shooters. And we got to talking about this. I'm not going to get too far into it because then he'll be on the program to talk about it when he has time. But we realized we see this very often in the first week or two of working with a youth student. Their personality is either they can concentrate and slow down and understand the situation and not take the shot before they're ready. And if they don't think they can take an accurate shot, we teach them, don't take that shot, wait, put the gun down, pick the gun back up, and start over. And then there's those kids, you put a gun in their hand and they immediately have to take the shot no matter what. And those kids never turn out to be accurate shooters. So I think this is just built into us. I'm not sure it's something we can, we have to work on, but I think for some people, they're either very deliberate or they have buck fever. One way or the other.
Or at least hopefully most folks fall somewhere in the middle of those two extremes you described.
Yeah, well, and of course defensive shooting is something completely different.
Yeah,
that's more from how you've practiced in your muscle how your, you know, your muscle memory. But yeah, this is a really interesting topic, and I'd like to talk about it a little bit more. I am very slow and deliberate in my shooting, and so I don't do really well in the USPSA type of shooting. But there's other people. We've lost students. We've lost kids who gravitate towards that USPA, you know, moving and shooting. And once they do that, they completely lose their ability for trigger control as youth. I'm sure they'll pick it back up again when they get older. But they lose that. And so it just seems like there's those two extremes. That's so I'm glad you called and pointed that out.
Well, curiously enough, my wife and I have to shoot at different targets. She likes regular bullseye round targets, and I shoot a lot tighter groups, and maybe this is a reflection of my personality, but
yep.
I shoot tighter groups when I'm working on a humanoid silhouette.
Oh, yeah. If I were you, I would stand behind your wife and let her do all the
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going to have to go to break now, but thank you so much for bringing this up.
You take care.
Okay, bye.
Makes great times even better. Sponsoring the KFAR live stream.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Israeli forces have found the body of a woman taken hostage by Hamas last month. The grim discovery was made in a building near Gaza's largest hospital.
We're talking about Yehuda Weiss, and she represents one of what we understand to be 240 people that were held inside Gaza following the October 7th massacre.
Fox's Trey Yinks in southern Israel. Several officers are being treated for injuries after violence erupted outside the Democrat National Committee in Washington last month. Last night, anti-Israeli demonstrators calling for a ceasefire on the war with Hamas. Fox's Griff Jenkins.
200 protesters locked arms, blockading the door, wanting to talk to Democrat members they knew were inside, and it quickly devolved into absolute mayhem.
So far, only one person arrested. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTVF reports that Representative Mary Peltola addressed Congress to advocate for the reauthorization of the Native American Housing and Self-Determination Act, also known as NAHASDA, on November 8th. Housing is an issue that often comes to mind when we think of big cities, places where homelessness is abundant and communities of tent-based dwellings can be seen. But finding safe and adequate shelter is also a struggle for those in Alaska's most remote spaces. I've heard stories from people across Alaska, some of the most rural and distant parts of our country, of about 20 people sharing a house with only 3 bedrooms and 1 bathroom, said Representative Peltola. They sleep in shifts because they don't have enough space. In an effort to combat the issue, Peltola is advocating for the reauthorization of NAHASDA. This act was passed in 1996, and it reorganized the system of housing assistance provided to Native Americans. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, NAHASDA expired when it failed to be reauthorized in 2013.
Streaming live on at KFAR660.com.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Who turned out the lights? Never get stuck in the dark with Auto Trim Design Moose Lights and backup lights on your vehicle. They're the best in the interior. See Auto Trim Design's wide variety of Vision X, Putco, and VLED lights that fit most vehicles. Stop in or give us a call, 456-8400, and we'll design the right setup that fits your lifestyle. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 20 years. We treat every customer the Alaskan way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Customized by
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett on the controls, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255. 458 Talk, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So I left off before Ron called about the books on Africa white hunters from the 1800s and 1900s, and I said that some of those stories were so scary they kept me up at night, and I will share some of those over the next year with you. But those are historic stories, a different time, different rifles, different calibers, different relationships with the natives. Even the herds of animals back then were not necessarily attuned to man, especially not firearms. In modern times, that has all changed. And although some hunters choose to hunt with the old double rifles and calibers, many of us use more modern firearms. And today, for an elephant hunt, the client hunter is not the only one with the rifle. The PH, the professional, licensed professional hunter, he's going to have one too. And a PH will have a dangerous game rifle on any dangerous game hunt, and they are trained and certified to use that correctly. So in some countries, it's required that in addition to your professional hunter, an official game management person, also armed with an appropriate dangerous game caliber rifle, will accompany the safari to make sure all is done legally and ethically. So today is different than when Kirimo Joe Bell hunted and he was the only one with a rifle. And that is why I wanted to share information from Dr. Kevin Robertson's book, The Perfect Shot 2. Dr. Robertson is a well-respected authority on hunting game today in Africa, as well as what calibers and firearms to use to take that game with. Robertson was born in South Africa in 1956 and qualified as a veterinarian from Oudtshoorn, if I'm pronouncing it right, Veterinary Institute, part of the University of Pretoria in South Africa in 1981. And he obtained his professional hunter's license in Zimbabwe in 1991. And he went on to train other professional hunters and guides in Zimbabwe. He also did administer the professional hunter test. With his veterinary background, Robertson conceived of writing a book containing anatomical diagrams of African game so that hunters would understand correct shot placement. His personal knowledge of game anatomy comes from the game dissections he performed for teaching purposes. So, being a licensed professional hunter, his knowledge of rifles, calibers, and how client hunters perform comes from personally conducting hunts. And we know how Kirimo Joe Bell had the elephant gutted and then had his men run spears through the empty body cavity to understand where on the outside of the animal one would shoot to hit the proper organ or artery to break certain bones. Well, Dr. Robertson has studied similarly, but in modern day with modern day medical knowledge and techniques available today. So here's a quote from the book cover blurb. Kevin has combined his interests in veterinary medicine, firearms, practical ballistics, and bullet performance with his love of Africa's wildlife and its conservation to produce his bestsellers, Neati, Africa's Most Dangerous, and now this totally revised edition of his original, most successful work, The Perfect Shot. He is also the author of It Shouldn't Happen, A Humorous Look at Safari Life, unquote. The book we're talking about today is The Perfect Shot 2, and you can look that up on Amazon. Neati is the Shona word for buffalo or your buffalo, and if you didn't know, Shona is the Bantu. It's a Bantu language spoken by over 14 million people in Africa, and everyone I met in Zimbabwe spoke both Shona and English and several other languages, too. They're very bilingual over there. I have also read It Shouldn't Happen, and it is excellent. That book is stories about all the crazy and near-death or humorous things that happened to Dr. Robertson while on hunts or other adventures in Africa. And much of what we read these days was written by historic hunters about hunting Africa game over 100 years ago. All of that can be explained and demystified by someone with Dr. Robertson's background. So this book, Robertson's The Perfect Shot 2, I would recommend to you, and also to give as gifts to hunters, even if they never hunt in Africa. The book is beautifully illustrated. The game position photographs and matching skeletal organ views with shot placements diagrammed make this a really easy book to understand. And in addition, Robertson provides rifle and caliber information for each animal, color visuals on the ammunition comparisons. The book is broken up into 8 parts. Part 1, titled The Basics, about 25 pages, including basic game and animal anatomy. Practical field ballistics for African sport hunter, the killing criteria, terminal bullet performance, and bullet selection, soft versus solid. And the remaining 7 parts of the book cover thick skin dangerous game, the thin skin carnivores, Africa's glamorous antelopes, Africa's bread and butter species, other non-dangerous game, small antelopes, and some practical considerations. In this last section, Robert discusses, among other things, making the perfect shot and caliber selection for an African safari. All I want to cover today is information from Robertson's chapter about elephant, so we can contrast suggested modern rifles, calibers, and methods with those of Karamojo Bells. And most of you know that the African elephant is the largest mammal, weighing up to 7 tons. And these large animals can stand 11 feet high or more at the shoulder. So think about getting up close to shoot such an enormous, powerful animal, the largest animal on earth. And I have to tell you, at Tiger Safari on the Zambezi River, I got really close to some elephants. I mean, they come up right to you, and they are awe-inspiring. Robertson explains the traits and habits of the elephant, and we learn much about the same from Bell. And we're taught in Alaska about a bear charging. For an elephant charge, Robertson cautions readers that in a mock charge, the elephant will come at you with its head up and ears extended, and he'll make a lot of noise, and he kicks up a lot of dust. And the elephant's message on a mock charge is, you are too close, get out of here. And as with a bear, do not turn and run. Back up slowly, whistle, shout, and wave your hands or your hat. If the elephant means a real charge, Robertson says, quote, an elephant will come at you like an express train, often silently or sometimes initiated by a shrill trumpeting scream, with its head held low, its ears pinned back, and its trunk folded up against its chest or held low and to the side. A charging elephant is a most terrifying spectacle. The man has yet to be born who can outrun an elephant in a determined charge, especially in thick bush. Stand your ground and defend yourself if you're suitably armed. A charging elephant can be stopped or turned relatively easily with a well-placed shot, unquote. When Joe Nava taught bear safety classes, he compared how the bear used its senses of sight, touch, smell, hearing, and taste to how we humans use our senses. And Joe would say not to let the bear use his sense of touch or taste on you, and we would all laugh. Well, elephants, according to Robertson, have poor eyesight in terms of seeing a human form standing still in the brush, but they do see movement. They do have a keen sense of smell, and they're able to pick up human scent as far as half a mile away with a strong wind from behind the person. And they have huge ears, and so an excellent sense of hearing. Robertson tells us between the elephant's sense of smell and hearing, those compensate for his poor eyesight. Now, Bell in his book talked about the low-pitched sounds or rumblings he could hear even from far off from a herd of elephants. And Dr. Robertson tells us, quote, elephants communicate over incredibly long distances by ultra-low-frequency sound waves generated in the upper nasal passages of the forehead at the very top of the trunk. Often mistaken for stomach rumblings, which is what Bell thought they were, these fairly loud, low-pitched communicating sounds are often the first sounds that are heard when stalking a standing or slowly moving elephant. When you hear these rumblings, you know you are close, unquote. And Robertson tells us elephants by the age of 45 years will already be on their last 2 pairs of their 6 sets of molar teeth that emerge during their lifetime. And he says that 10 to 15 years later, that last set will be worn out, and after that, the elephant will no longer be able to chew food and it will starve to death. And this is something we should know. The public who is against elephant hunting needs to know. And this is also why hunters in Africa are guided to the oldest, worn ivory elephants to hunt. It is an honor to take these old elephants. These are no longer breeding elephants, and they are soon to die by natural age. Robertson notes that few elephants live beyond 70 years. And Robertson also writes, quote, treat all cows and young calves and any tuskless elephant with caution and the greatest respect, because they are really the cheeky, often really the cheeky ones, unquote. And now I'm at Robertson's section titled The Hunt. And though this chapter, all through this chapter are wonderful photographs of the elephants in different positions and that you might encounter them in, Robertson writes, quote, successful hunting requires an adequate rifle, a good pair of boots, and a whole truckload of determination. The saying, you hunt an elephant with your legs, is absolutely true. For this reason, elephant hunting is by far the most demanding form of big game hunting. Ask any successful elephant hunter what he remembers most about the hunt, and he will more than likely reply, the endless walking. And don't go anywhere, don't walk anywhere, because we're going to go to our third break, and we'll finish this up around the corner.
Fix something? Are you looking for a whatchamacallit or a kinda thingamajig? Find it at Century Hardware. See the largest selection of standard and metric nuts, bolts, and screws in the interior. If it hooks on, holds on, hangs on, clips on, glues on, bolts on, screws in. If it fastens stuff together, Century has it. Always has. Be sure to ask about their prodigious selection of doomaflagies. Century Hardware. What you need right now.
It's remote start season at Auto Trim Design. We are the only CopyStar Pro dealer in the interior of Alaska. Our top-of-the-line Pro T13 comes with a rechargeable two-way full-color LCD screen remote, and it's capable of up to 3 miles of range. It's waterproof and has a proximity unlock feature. No more fishing for your keys when your arms are full. We pair it with Drone Mobile, which gives you the ability to start your vehicle from your smartphone or smartwatch. Auto Trim Design is your number one remote start dealer.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with a chance of snow. High of 26, easterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, snow likely. Lows dip down to about 11. Snow likely again tomorrow. Highs level off around 17. Cloudy skies, 1 to 3 inches of snow today through tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett on the controls, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms or elephants today. And I can already tell you we're not going to get completely through with what I had to say. We can pick up the rest a little bit. It would only take about 10 minutes after Thanksgiving, the week after Thanksgiving, but I'll try to get to a good stopping point today. I just love Robertson's book, and I really do highly recommend it, The Perfect Shot, too. So I just talked about, or I just quoted him talking about the endless walking. And why is that? Well, Robertson tells us that, quote, most elephant hunts need to be at least 14 days in length. A 21-day hunt is probably a better bet. If you want to find a really good old bull elephant with heavy ivory, you will quickly learn just how far an elephant walks in a day. And now you can understand a 21-day hunt, why these hunts are $50,000 to $70,000. But it also is determined by where, what country, and what terrain you're hunting elephant in, how thick the elephant are in that area. So I have a good story about Courtney Selu, Blue Boots, the best African hunting booth for walking and stalking, but I don't have time for that today, so I'll talk about that another time. I may never hunt an elephant, but at least I have elephant hunting boots to walk around in. So I wore them all summer on the trail. Now, Dr. Robertson tells us that in African countries where it is legal to hunt elephant, the 375 Holland & Holland rimless magnum is normally the minimum caliber allowed. And in Zimbabwe and Mozambique, it is legal to use the 9.3 by 62 or the rimmed equivalent, the 9.3 by 74R. Now, Robertson says these two cartridges are sufficient if the shot placement is correct and good quality solids are used. But Robertson tells us that there is a difference between a caliber that will kill an elephant and a caliber that one can rely on to stop an elephant, and that's two different situations. He says the 9.3 are the absolute minimum for stopping power. Quote, at what are considered normal elephant shooting distances, the 9.3 millimeters with the right 286 or 320 grain solid bullets possess sufficient penetration to reach the brain, but from both the side on and the frontal positions. Such solids placed just behind the shoulder into the heart lung area will also penetrate sufficiently to traverse the chest cavity completely, unquote. And he feels the 9.3s are accurate and shootable in terms of recoil and rifle weight, but he tells us for stopping power on an elephant that caliber is not sufficient on bullet weight, bullet frontal surface area, or KO, the knockout power. And knockout power, or the Taylor KO factor, it's a measurement developed by another famous elephant ivory hunter who killed over 1,000 elephants and wrote several books, John Ponduro Taylor, and I do have at least one of his books. The takeaway in Robertson's opinion is that the 9.3s will work to stop a charging elephant, but you will have no room for error on the brain shot. You would need a brain shot to immediately drop an elephant that's charging you. Also consider that if you need to take a second shot, that caliber will not have the momentum to deeply penetrate the elephant's body length, nor will it have bone-smashing power. So for hunting, yes, but if you're hunting elephant, you do have to consider what happens if things go wrong, and you might want enough caliber and rifle to stop a charge. And the flip side of that is your professional hunter will have his big dangerous game rifle, and it will be enough of a caliber to stop a charge. That's partially what he gets paid for, to keep you alive. I don't know about elephant, but I have read about a dangerous game professional hunter who was charged by a Cape buffalo, and the client hunter had to shoot it. So you never know what is going to happen out there. The next step up, according to Robertson, is the 9.3 by 64 millimeter and the popular 375 H&H and the 375 Ruger. And they have better ballistic performance compared to the 9.3 by 62 or the 9.3 by 74R. And Robertson says especially with 300 grain bullets. Now, we're not talking about Robertson's chapter on bullet selection, but he reiterates here that on those three calibers I just mentioned, the 9.3, the 375, or the 375 Ruger, they are even better if one uses 350 grain bullets, as it improves terminal ballistic performance of the 375 H&H for both momentum and knockout power. And I don't want to quote too much. If you're interested, you should purchase this book. I think a lot of it's applicable to hunting in Alaska, too. Robertson spends time talking about the best flat nose type solids and bullet weight to use in these preferred guns, muzzle velocity, twist rate, and more technical items. But now we move into more powerful calibers above that 375 H&H range. And Robertson discusses the 378 Weatherby Magnum, and he writes this gun produces substantial recoil and a deafening muzzle blast, as well as other issues at close range elephant shooting, such as excessive impact velocity causing erratic, unreliable terminal bullet performance. And he notes there are better choices for stepping up above the 375 H&H. And we have a caller. Caller, you are on the line.
Yeah, I shoot a 400 grain bullet out of a 416.
Yes.
Remington.
And I'm about to talk about those 416s.
And I got a solid brake on one, and it does move the brush out in front of you. You can definitely tell you got a lot of power. Okay.
Do you hunt with it?
My favorite target is a 5-gallon bucket of water.
Ah, okay. That sounds like where I am right now with my 375.
I'm peaceful.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So, just like our caller, Robertson moves right into the 40 calibers, saying those cartridges, quote, offer a significant improvement in terms of bullet weight, frontal surface area, knockout power, muzzle energy, and momentum, unquote. And here he's talking about the 40 to 435s from 350 grains to 450 grains in the 416 Rigby and the 404 Jeffrey. And he notes muzzle velocities in the 2150 to 2400 feet per second range. And skipping quite a bit of his discussion, I'm going to land on Robertson discussing his opinions that, quote, the 404 Jeffrey, in my opinion, that's him talking, the unsung hero of the African 400s. With good reason, it was the standard issue of the entire Colonial Game Department of yesteryear. The reason for this was simply that it provided effective and effective on all pachyderms ballistic combination that afforded manageable recoil and therefore more consistent shooting. African game scouts were able to handle the shooting characteristics of this mild-mannered cartridge, and in proven Mauser 98 action rifles, it became an effective tool of the trade, unquote. Now, Dr. Robertson writes that he sees no point in using any 400-grain, 40-caliber bullet any faster than 2,400 feet per second. And that's because the high speeds result in increased recoil and muzzle blast, and they also cause erratic and unreliable terminal bullet performance. And he notes, quote, these are the reasons why the 416 Weatherby Magnum has such a poor African reputation, unquote. So moving on, Robertson gets to the Rigby 450 Nitro Express, introduced by John Rigby in 1898, and he says this is the standard for the ideal elephant caliber. And he goes into specs on that. The caliber became popular both in Africa and India, and he notes that it had both phenomenal penetration and knockout power. It was a much more effective caliber than what was previously being used in Africa prior to 1898, which Robertson tells us was the double 8-bore with its load of 10 drams of black powder and an 862-grain spherical lead bullet. Now, the Rigby 450 Nitro Express double rifle weighed 10.5 to 11 pounds, whereas the old double 8-bore weighed up to 17 or 18 pounds, and thus the 450 Nitro Express became the standard for elephant calibers. And Robertson explains that after Rigby introduced their 450 Nitro Express, that Holland & Holland introduced the 500-450 Magnum Nitro Express in a side-lock double rifle. And then Jeffrey introduced its 450 number 2 Nitro Express. And for those of you who love to read about these old rifles, Robertson goes into a little detail on ballistics. And I don't have any depth of knowledge about these old rifles and calibers, only what I've learned from Dr. Robertson's books. And I do have several other very good references that I have looked at, but I've never shot one. And I will tell you, I did have the opportunity to shoot one, but I chickened out. Okay, now I kind of wonder if I should have gone ahead and did. I would have ended up flat on my back, I'm sure. So moving forward again in 1907, we get into some colonial war issues between the British and India. And the Indian rebels against the British were using black powder 577 450 Martini Henry rifles. So the British government in India banned all the 450 caliber rifles in India, and there was, of course, there was elephant hunting both in India and Africa, and a lot of times by the same people. So the end result of this ban, according to Robertson, was that the Rigby's original 450 Nitro Express was effective and accepted for both African and Indian elephants, and so that's how that gun became the standard. Collectors and those who just want the thrill to experience the nostalgia of using older doubles can now get modern ammunition for them. Robertson lists A-Square Company, Kynot Cartridge, I guess that's Kynamco Limited, and there is also Bertram's in Australia, Wolfgang Romney in Germany, and Norma in Sweden, and Robertson likes all of these. He has a lot of European clients when he was a professional hunter. And he says, quote, And good stuff it is too. Boxer primed and loaded with either Woodley steel jacketed solids or monolithics. This new ammunition regulates well in most of the old double rifles, giving them a new lease on life. Unquote.
And we've got 10 seconds.
I've got 10 seconds. Oh no. Okay. Well, we'll finish this up in 2 weeks. I hope all of you can listen to the Thanksgiving broadcast. Melissa is going to help me pre-record it, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I'll be back live the week after.